Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. If you had storm damage, we'll have news today about property tax relief and a county recovery center that's open through Saturday. Medicare is celebrating its 50th birthday this week, and we'll have information about how Medicare is improving patient safety and having a lifelong impact on the well-being of children. Learn about a dog food recall. And speaking of food, it's bon appetit for patients at Sharp Grossmont Hospital, which recently hired two celebrity chefs to cook up hospital food that's not only nutritious, but tastes good, too. Today, we'll continue our coverage of the presidential race, this time profiling three maverick candidates who changed parties for the Run for the Roses, or rather the White House Rose Garden, Rand Paul, Bernie Sanders, and Lincoln Chafee. Hear how San Diego State researchers are developing models to help firefighters predict the path of wildfires. Learn why El Cajon police are looking for the driver in a hit-and-run crash into a fire hydrant. From Public News Service, learn why oceans off California are becoming more acidic and why we should be concerned. And then on Destination East County, hear about some fabulous events coming up in the next couple of weeks, from summer movies in the park and free concerts to A Sip of Julian featuring wine, beer, cider, and mead, plus a brand new cabaret-style show taking stage in East County. The sheriff invites you to a night out against crime Tuesday, and we'll have details on activities near you. Plus, we'll replay our Sounds of History interview with famed saddlemaker Gary McClintock from Descanso, talking about the history of vaqueros in our region. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Ebba Renner reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ with some news about property tax relief for storm victims. If you suffered property damage from the storms that hit July 17th or 18th generated by Hurricane Dolores, you can request a reassessment of your property and a reduction in your taxes until the property is repaired or rebuilt, according to City News Service. San Diego County Assessor, Record, and Clerk Ernest Dronenberg Jr. announced Monday, quote, "The assessor's office will be proactively mailing property tax relief applications to affected property owners," adding, "I would also like to strongly encourage all property owners who suffered flood damage to their property in excess of $10,000 to contact our office for the necessary claim form at 619-531-4993 or by visiting the assessor's website at sdarcc.com," unquote. If a property is rebuilt or restored to a manner similar to before the damage, owners can avoid a tax increase. However, if a property is substantially improved or enlarged, then a higher tax could be assessed after the construction is completed. The property tax is available for damaged homes and outbuildings, commercial and industrial properties, and mobile homes. Vehicles and furniture aren't covered since they're not subject to property taxes. San Diego County has been declared a disaster area by the state, as have five other counties. At least 130 homes and businesses in San Diego County have reported property damage from the storms to the county thus far. The deluge broke county records for rainfall in July, causing flooding, mudslides, and lightning-caused fires.
This is Miriam Raftery with news for victims of the recent storms. If you suffered damage from flooding, mudslides, and heavy rain on July 18th or 19th, the county has set up a local assistance center at the Ramona Library, located at 1275 Main Street in Ramona. It will remain open through August 1st to provide recovery information for residents and business owners who are in need of help. San Diego County Supervisor Diane Jacob toured the damaged area in Ramona last week and was present for the center's opening this week. She said, "My heart goes out to all of the people who suffered loss. This is all about helping them." The county is offering a variety of information and resources at the temporary center, which will include help with building permits and plan checks, debris removal and road cleanup, repairing damaged septic systems, disposing of household hazardous waste, erosion control, crisis counseling, insurance help, help with vehicle registration, assistance to apply for CalFresh or food stamps and other aid, as well as how to protect yourself from contracting scammers. Many organizations and agencies are participating, including county and state agencies, a community recovery team, and the American Red Cross. The center will be open through Saturday from 9:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. Child care is available on site. More than 210 residents and business owners so far have reported to the county that they sustained damage from the storm, which was fueled by remnants of Hurricane Dolores. In Ramona, some residents found over 2 feet of mud washed up into their houses. Residents with property damage can also complete a brief damage survey at sdcountyrecovery.com. Now, the survey is not a claim, but it will be passed along to the Small Business Administration, which could potentially offer low-interest loans to homeowners as well as business owners who are uninsured or underinsured and sustained damage. In order to offer the loans, the SBA requires that at least 25 homes or businesses in the county must have sustained rain or flood damage that amounts to at least 40% of the fair market value of their underinsured or uninsured property prior to the damage. So it's very important to fill out the survey. For more information and resources or to complete the survey, visit sdcountyrecovery.com.
As gas prices climb, gas thieves are on the prowl in East County. Several residents in the Fletcher Hills area have posted notices on the Nextdoor online forum warning of gas siphoned from their vehicles. One post reports gas siphoned from a truck parked on Jimzell. Another theft reportedly occurred from a truck parked on a driveway. A neighbor heard a noise at 2 a.m. and saw an old Bronco outside, but didn't realize gas had been stolen until morning when the gas cap was found off the truck. Another neighbor reported seeing a man in a Bronco loitering on their street just a few weeks earlier at midnight. The Ramona Sentinel reports that 6 juveniles were arrested earlier this month for siphoning gasoline from a truck parked at the Ramona Unified School District bus yard. In November 2014, 10 News reported on a white taxicab whose driver was suspected of stealing gasoline from numerous vehicles. Surveillance video showed the cab pulling up behind parked vehicles from which gas was then siphoned. In some cases, thieves take only part of the gas, making it less likely that the vehicle owners will realize they've been robbed. In other cases, they drain the tanks completely, leaving victims unable to start their vehicles. So how can you avoid becoming a victim of a gas thief? A locking gas cap may help dissuade some thieves, however they can be opened with a screwdriver or lock-picking tool. A better option is to secure vehicles in a garage or park under a light or motion detector in a place where the vehicle is visible to others. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barrena.
Medicaid, or Medi-Cal as it's known in California, is turning 50 years old this week, and a new study shows it has improved the lives of millions since its inception. The Georgetown Center for Children and Families looked at the latest studies that followed kids with Medicaid and found they are much healthier as adults. They tend to have lower blood pressure and make fewer emergency room visits, which saves taxpayer dollars. Georgetown professor Joan Alker notes the studies found that participants also make more money as adults and are more likely to surpass their parents' income level.
Some studies are now finding that children who received Medicaid actually pay more taxes as adults and use fewer government subsidies. So essentially, the government is getting a great return on investment by providing kids with Medicaid.
The studies also found that adolescents with Medicaid are more likely to go to college and have lower rates of drinking, smoking, eating disorders, and risky sexual behavior. In California, half of children are on Medi-Cal. That's more than 5 million kids. Now the Golden State is taking things one step further by extending Medi-Cal to undocumented children next year. Mike O'Day with the nonprofit advocacy group Children Now says the program is a critical part of the healthcare system.
So Medicaid works. It's an incredibly important program in making sure that kids are on track developmentally, are prepared for school, and ready to learn, and stay healthy so that they can live and grow.
The Georgetown study also found that Medicaid cut the percentage of uninsured children in the U.S. by half in recent years, taking it from 14% down to 7%. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Leon Thompson with a health report on East County Magazine. A study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association shows dramatic improvements in the care and safety of Medicare patients. Across the nation, a death rate among Medicare patients fell 16% from 1999 to 2013. In addition, hospitalizations dropped sharply, and costs also fell sharply. The study's author, Harlan Krumwaltz, a cardiologist and professor at Yale School of Medicine, calls the results jaw-dropping, USA Today reports. Researchers looked at records of over 68 million Medicare patients aged 65 and older. The study also examined hospitalization rates and costs for Medicare's fee-for-service program, in which doctors and hospitals get paid for every procedure or visit. That accounts for 71% of the entire Medicare program. Hospitalizations of fee-for-service patients dropped 24% from 1999 to 2013, and patients who were hospitalized were 45% less likely to die in the hospital in 2013 than back in 1999. Moreover, costs for hospitalized fee-for-service patients were reduced 15%. So what accounts for these huge improvements in the U.S. healthcare system? Back in 1999, an Institute of Medicine report found hospital errors killed up to 98,000 patients a year, sparking reform efforts. Since then, hospitals have been working to improve safety. In addition, the Affordable Care Act requires hospitals to report adverse outcomes, and hospitals with dismal records can incur financial penalties. Improved treatments and medications for conditions such as cancer and heart disease likely play a role, along with improvements in public health, such as reduction in smoking and cleaner air. Dr. Krumwaltz, the study's author, has voiced surprise to find such dramatic improvements in patients' mortality rates, hospitalizations, and costs in such a short time.
This is Ed Barena for East County Magazine with news about a dog food recall. Nature's Variety has announced a voluntary recall of its Instinct raw chicken formula food for dogs due to salmonella contamination. The products, which were distributed in California, including San Diego and East County, pose a health risk to pets and people. The recall includes only Instinct raw chicken formula frozen diets products with a best buy date of April 27, 2016. No illnesses have been reported to date. However, the company advises that the dog food can sicken animals that consume the contaminated products, as well as humans who handle the food. Pets with salmonella infections may be lethargic and have diarrhea, fever, and vomiting. Some pets will only have decreased appetite, fever, and abdominal pain. Infected but otherwise healthy pets can be carriers and infect other animals or humans, the company said. If your pet has consumed the recalled product and has symptoms, you should contact a veterinarian. Consumers who have purchased the recalled products can obtain a full refund or exchange by either returning the product in its original packaging or bringing a proof of purchase back to their retailer. For more information about this recall, you can visit naturesvariety.com.
Hospital food that's not only healthy but also savory, full of fresh ingredients, and visually stunning? That's what two celebrated San Diego chefs plan to cook up when they redesign the kitchen menu at Sharp Grossmont Hospital. These culinary experts' collective experience includes cooking up feasts for heads of state, rock stars, and other celebrities, starring on cooking shows, serving as top chefs at resorts and top hotels, plus winning a Culinary Olympics competition. As the new executive chefs at Sharp Grossmont, Larry Benares and William Sayer bring their extensive culinary talents to the Sodexo team at Sharp Grossmont, which operates food and nutrition services at the La Mesa Hospital. Benares will be responsible for designing and orchestrating meal service for the hospital's inpatient unit, while Sayer will oversee retail operations, which include the cafe and catering services. A fixture on the San Diego culinary scene, Chef Larry Benares is well known to San Diego foodies. Prior to his role as executive chef at Rady's Children's Hospital, he hosted bi-weekly cooking segments on KGTV, two cable cooking shows, and a popular radio program. A three-time gold medalist in the Culinary Olympics and certified executive chef by the American Culinary Federation. Benares was at the helm at such California landmarks as the Disneyland Hotel and Queen Mary. Benares has the distinction of cooking for political dignitaries and celebrities, including the late pop sensation Michael Jackson. He has prepared his award-winning cuisines for other famous personalities, including Filipina singer and actress Leah Salonga, various presidents of the Philippines, and the Sultan of Brunei. Sayer comes to Sharp Hospital after launching upscale dining venues such as downtown San Diego's Marble Room and Delicias restaurant in Rancho Santa Fe. He was the executive chef at the Great Oak Steakhouse at the Pechanga Resort and Casino in Temecula. His unique style of cooking stems from his experience in Colorado, New Mexico, and Arizona, where he fused California cuisine with a Southwestern influence. After moving through the ranks at some of the most illustrious companies in San Diego, including the Lodge at Torrey Pines and the Bahia Resort, Sayer was named executive sous chef at Catamaran Resort. He is a certified chef de cuisine by the American Culinary Federation. "We're thrilled to have these two powerhouses in our kitchen," said Scott Evans, CEO, Sharp Grossmont Hospital. "The goal of our food and dining experience at the Sharp Grossmont is to tempt patients' appetite, meet their nutritional needs, and provide enjoyable and memorable dining experiences with a large selection of appealing food choices." Hospital food service has dramatically improved in the past decade. The national push for healthier eating options in schools and restaurants has prompted hospitals to eliminate fried food, cut down on unnecessary fats, and increase the use of whole grains, herbs, and locally sourced produce. Hospitals like Sharp Grossmont are seeing a return to comfort foods and a focus on getting patients to eat while they are in the hospital in order to promote their healing and recovery. Benares and Sayer will help ensure the hospitals deliver delicious and nutritious food choices to get patients back on the road to recovery. Sharp Grossmont's efforts are part of a national campaign to improve the health and sustainability of the healthcare sector called the Healthier Hospitals Initiative. This effort encourages hospitals to set an example by serving healthy food and beverages, which includes reducing the amount of meat and sugary beverages while increasing the percentage of locally grown food. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery, and we're back today with more coverage on the 2016 presidential race for the White House, the Run for the Roses, or should we say the White House Rose Garden. Today we're going to be profiling three maverick candidates in this horse race: Rand Paul, who was a libertarian until he decided to run and declared himself a Republican; Bernie Sanders, who was an independent who called himself a Democratic Socialist before he decided to run as a Democrat in the presidential campaign; and Lincoln Chafee, who was a liberal Republican before he changed parties to become a Democratic candidate. I'm here with Juwan Armstrong, a San Diego State student who's been helping us research these candidates. Juwan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with Rand Paul. Can you tell us a few of the highlights of his biography? He's, of course, the senator from Kentucky. What else can you tell us about his bio?
Well, what I can tell you is that he was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. His father was actually Ron Paul, who is a U.S. congressman, and then he also was a Republican presidential candidate back in 2012. He eventually followed his father's footsteps in the medical field. Paul attended Baylor University, and then he attended Duke University Medical School. He got his foot into the political field when he founded the Kentucky Taxpayers United, which was a group that acted as a watchdog over taxation and spending issues in the Kentucky State Legislature. Back in 2008, he became an active member in the Tea Party after the economic crisis in America. In 2009, he ran for a seat in the U.S. Senate, and he won.
On to Bernie Sanders, who's been serving in the U.S. Senate representing Vermont since 2008. And before that, he was in the House of Representatives for 16 years. He's 73 years old. He was the only independent in Congress. Sanders is the son of Jewish immigrants from Poland. He was raised in Brooklyn, New York, grew up in a working-class family, and he has said that unfairness that he saw as a child led to his self-proclaimed democratic socialist political views. When he was a young man, he lived on a kibbutz in Israel. He studied psychology at the University of Chicago, and he participated in a civil rights march in Washington, D.C. He's also worked as a filmmaker and a freelance writer before he was elected mayor of Burlington, which is Vermont's largest city. Later on, he moved on to Congress. Juwan, what can you tell us about
What can you tell us about Senator Lincoln Chafee, who's probably best known for having served as both senator and governor of Rhode Island?
He received his degree from Brown University. He became interested in politics in 1995 when he was a delegate to the Rhode Island's National Convention. He became part of city council for the city of Warwick. Then he followed and became mayor and then became senator.
So what are some of the key issues in Rand Paul's campaign?
Some of the key issues that Rand Paul wants to bring to light is the economy, foreign policy, immigration.
Mm-hmm.
On some things about the economy that he has discussed, Paul believes that in shrinking the size of government and eliminating the federal departments such as education. He also disagrees with the Federal Reserve control over the money supply and interest rates and believes that the decision should be exercised by the Congress.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, as a libertarian, libertarians very often take a sort of a non-interventionist policy on foreign military intervention. What are his views on some of the foreign policy issues of the day?
He believes in negotiating with Tehran in efforts to reduce Iran's nuclear ambitions that results in war.
I think he voted against the Iraq war also.
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. How about immigration? What are his views there?
He actually favors in granting temporary visas. However, he does not favor in granting them a pathway to legal citizenship.
What about some of the issues such as same-sex marriage and abortion? Where does he stand on those?
He actually opposes same-sex marriages, but when you're talking about the abortion, he's kind of seen as in the middle,
mm-hmm.
and I'll tell you why. Because he opposes abortion, but does not oppose it when it involves the mother's health. He also, in a recent CNN interview, Paul has claimed that he supported the use of medication such as the morning after pill, but he does describe himself as 100% pro-life.
On the same-sex marriage, by the way, he has said that he thinks it should be left up to the state. So
yes.
He isn't for banning it altogether, but he is for leaving that right up to the states. Of course, that's really in the courts right now anyway. The Supreme Court has spoken on that one. What about environmental issues? Global warming, climate change is certainly a huge issue in this race.
He's one of the individuals that believes that human activity plays a huge contribution to the climate change. He has also offered support for rules to reduce climate warming emissions.
Interesting. So that would make him kind of a standout among the Republicans in the race, and that's a different position than what most of them seem to have. As for Bernie Sanders, the cornerstones of his campaign are equality and eliminating the income disparity, that wealth gap. He actually filibustered in the Senate to block extension of Bush-era tax cuts for the wealthy. So both he and Rand Paul seem to be fans of filibustering to block things they don't like. Bernie Sanders also favors increasing Social Security and Medicare benefits. And he would pay for that by raising taxes on the wealthy, unlike most of the Republicans who actually want to decrease taxes. He has called for greater oversight of Wall Street and more protections for the middle class and working Americans. And he says he wants to make higher education more affordable, and he actually would go further than Obamacare. He actually instead wants to embrace free universal health care for all Americans.
Uh-huh.
He has spoken up for women's rights, including equal pay. He's pro-choice on the abortion issue, and he does support gay marriage. And unlike his primary opponent, Hillary Clinton, he actually voted against the Iraq war. On civil liberties issues, he sides more with libertarians, however, than with Democrats or Republicans, in that he opposes the sweeping government collection of phone and email records of millions of Americans. So he would kind of agree with Rand Paul on that particular issue. What are the key issues that Lincoln Chafee is outspoken on?
Chafee voted against authorizing the war in Iraq back in 2012. He stated that it was all rhetoric about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq in an interview that he had with ABC News recently.
Interesting. And, of course, we found out after the fact that there were not any weapons of mass destruction. There were a lot of reports that came out that documented that.
Mm-hmm.
What about Iran? What are his views there?
Iran, he actually favors in strengthening relations with Iran. He compares former President Nixon's approach with China back in 1972 when he visited Beijing. He also wants to improve relations with Russia to deal with problems like confronting the Islamic State and dealing with Iran.
Okay. How about the environment? What are his views on, say, climate change?
During his term as governor, he signed legislation to have the state of Rhode Island reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 80% in the year 2050.
We're talking about Lincoln Chafee, the Democrat. Mm-hmm. What are his views on immigration?
He supports establishing a guest worker program that would eventually lead to a path toward citizenship for immigrants in the country who came here illegally.
How about the economy and budget issues?
Chafee supports raising the minimum wage and is no stranger in embracing the Affordable Care Act. However, he does agree with the Republican views, including supporting the privatization of Social Security and approving a free trade agreement.
Interesting. So that would sort of differentiate him from the rest of the mm-hmm. Democrats in that he wants to privatize Social Security, whereas, say, Sanders, Clinton, some of the others don't.
And in fact, the others have been vocal about supporting Social Security.
Let's talk about controversies. What are some of the controversies you found involving Rand Paul?
Earlier this year, Rand Paul staged a successful filibuster in the Senate to block reauthorization of the Patriot Act. He drew praise from the civil libertarians concerned about government spying on Americans' phone and internet records. But he was also scorned from conservatives who believe Paul put American security at risk.
As for Bernie Sanders, one area where he's a little different than some others in the pack that's been controversial is he is a liberal, but from a rural state. So his record on gun control actually has drawn criticism on both sides. He has supported a ban on assault weapons, but voted against background checks. Also, he is the oldest candidate in the race, or at least if he's elected, he would be the oldest president. So that could be a concern for some voters. Mm-hmm. He's also Jewish. If elected, he'd be the first Jewish president, but there could be anti-Semitism out there, and so that's an obstacle that he would need to overcome. What about Lincoln Chafee? Any controversies there?
Yeah. Back in 2011 and 2012, he came under fire for calling the Rhode Island Christmas tree at the Rhode Island State House a holiday tree. He insisted that he was being inclusive and was representing all of Rhode Island. He said that I have to be respectful of everyone. However, some individuals called him a Grinch.
Well, there you go. Okay. Moving on to fascinating facts. Do you have a fascinating fact or two for us about Rand Paul?
Yeah, actually, he never received his bachelor's degree.
You got a medical degree without a bachelor degree?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's possible years ago. Now you can't do that. But actually, he left Baylor University to attend Duke University School of Medicine without having to finish his undergraduate coursework. At the time, Duke did not require an undergraduate degree if a student test scores were adequate.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting things about Sanders has been his fundraising method. You know, unlike the rest of these guys that are all bankrolled by huge wealthy donors or corporate donors and PACs, Sanders didn't do that. And yet he managed to succeed in raising more money than all the Republican candidates put together, not counting their PACs. Some of them have a lot from that. As of the June 17th filing, according to Politics USA, he had raised $8.3 million, and that was from 200,000 different individual donors with an average donation of $45.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting? How about Lincoln Chafee?
After completing his undergraduate degree, he studied at the Montana State University Horseshoeing School and spent 7 years working as a farrier at racetracks in the U.S. and Canada.
So in this horse race, we actually have a guy who has shoed horses before. That's interesting. Makes horseshoes. Okay. Any final words on the, you know, the odds of winning or what we might expect if you were handicapping this race? What would you say?
Well, what I would say about Rand Paul is that his ideology holds some appeal to people across the political spectrum, including libertarians and disaffected voters in both major parties. However, other Republicans view him as trying to isolate the U.S. from other countries. His libertarian views on shrinking government also put him at the extreme right end of the spectrum, though his support for state rights to regulate marijuana has some appeal for younger liberal voters, making Paul a wild card in this race.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I would certainly call Sanders a wild card, too. Mm-hmm. He's been sort of pulling Hillary a little bit to the left, talking about some of those issues that neither of the more centrist candidates in either party were talking about, especially the wealth gap.
It definitely seems that Paul and Sanders kind of have this appeal to the younger voters.
I think so. It's interesting. So. He's an old guy. Mm-hmm. They're both old guys, we should say, and yet they're appealing to a lot of youthful votes. Yeah. And of course, Sanders, you know, we'll have to see, is America ready for a democratic socialist? Who knows? He was originally considered quite the long shot, but he's been polling just 8 points behind Hillary now in some of those key states like New Hampshire and drawing, you know, bigger crowds in Iowa.
Some national polls are actually showing him beating the leading Republicans now, which is very interesting. Much like Howard Dean, he's organizing people over the internet. Here in San Diego over the weekend, there were a number of Bernie Sanders rallies that drew several thousand people all total.
So I think we'll just have to see what happens. What about Lincoln Chafee?
Well, Chafee might have a difficult time opposed to the other two candidates we've been talking about. Even though he's passionate about national security, he does have a habit of calling out Clinton on her ideas because he sees her as being more of the hawk in this race. This could possibly work in his favor. It could not. But also another issue that Chafee's dealing with is that it doesn't seem that he has a set campaign infrastructure or strategy.
Yeah, he got into the race awfully late and really without the big name recognition or following of some of the larger candidates in the Democratic Party, especially Hillary. We've been talking about the maverick candidates, the three of them that changed parties at the last second when they decided they wanted to run for president, Bernie Sanders, Rand Paul, and Lincoln Chafee. And of course, we'll have to see if in voters' minds, flipping parties is a handicap or not. It often is in a race because sometimes when people flip parties, people aren't quite sure where the loyalties lie. And so that can sometimes attract certain voters who think they're more independent minded, but it can also lose some voters who are looking for somebody that's sort of a tried and true adherent to the policies of their party. Now, just for fun, we checked with a Vegas odds making site, BetVega. Of course, none of these candidates are up in the front tier with the front runners yet, but Bernie Sanders is moving up in the pack. He's at 20-1 odds right now. Rand Paul is way back there at 60-1, and Chafee is bringing up the rear at 300-1 odds among these three maverick candidates. Thank you, Juwan, for joining us today as we continue our coverage of the presidential run for the White House Rose Garden 2016.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Thank you for all the wonderful research. Big help. We'll be back next week, and we'll be talking about the rest of the pack running for the presidency, the middle of the pack, as well as some of the dark horses, the real long shots in the race.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
How can a sandbox filled with powdered walnut shells help firefighters and property owners? It's all part of 3D models created by San Diego State University's Visualization Center, which is partnering with SimTable to create modeling software that will predict how wildfires will spread. Researchers at SDSU project a map of the powdered walnut shells, which are mounded into miniature mountains and valleys shown on the map. Then a virtual flame is lit. Software uses information including topography, wind speed and direction, fuel type and more to predict which direction the fire will spread and how fast, SDSU's News Center reports. Once firefighters understand how a wildfire will spread, they can better devise strategies for fighting it. The program even allows users to simulate tactics such as water drops, bulldozing fire lines, ground crews, and controlled burns to see what is most apt to work the best. SDSU is now testing how the software can be made user-friendly. Up next, SimTable and SDSU hope to create an app that firefighters can access on their mobile phones at the fire scene or on the road, helping to keep firefighters safe as they work to protect other people's property and lives. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
El Cajon police are looking for the driver of a black Mercedes sedan who fled the scene after striking a fire hydrant near the intersection of Ballantine Street and Madison Avenue in El Cajon on Monday. The collision caused a 40-foot-high water geyser. Heartland Fire and Rescue crews in El Cajon responded and were able to shut off the water in time to prevent damage to homes. However, several trees sustained damage. For East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Climate change is turning the ocean water more acidic and creating low oxygen dead zones, issues that have serious negative implications for the whole ecosystem. That's the subject of a Wednesday workshop in Sacramento on the findings of the West Coast Ocean Acidification and Hypoxia Science Panel. Jen Phillips is with the Ocean Protection Council, an arm of the state government that advises policymakers on marine science issues.
They'll be talking about the panel's findings and what kind of implications this has for resource management and policy for California, Washington, Oregon, and the province of British Columbia moving forward.
Studies have shown that much of the carbon dioxide released into the atmosphere dissolves into seawater, making it more acidic. Scientists believe this weakens some marine species, including corals, crabs, and sponges, and is often accompanied by giant pools of low-oxygen water that drive away fish populations. Phillips says these stressors can have a ripple effect.
So acidification and hypoxia may affect one organism, but what does that then mean for the rest of the food chain? And it can have really far-reaching ecosystem-wide effects, especially when you layer this on top of a warming ocean, also from climate change.
She says the panel of scientists has been working for 2 years to come up with policy recommendations to be released this fall. In the meantime, the Wednesday workshop is free and open to the public and will be live-streamed. It starts at 10 a.m. at the California Environmental Protection Agency office in Sacramento. More information is online at westcoastoah.org. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County features a once-in-a-blue-moon hike, a vocal and jazz trio concert, and a watermelon festival at a Camel Dairy.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including movies at Santee Lakes, A Sip of Julian, and a rollicking new Lamplighters Theater production.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more.
The Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona invites you to Watermelon Days on July 31st from 1 to 7 p.m. Visitors can enjoy feeding watermelons to camels, as well as watching a camel show and an exotic bird show, savoring a barbecue, and for children, camel rides. There's also a watermelon carving contest and more. For tickets and details, visit CamelDairy.com.
Here's an event that happens only once in a blue moon. The county's Parks and Recreation Department is offering a free sunset blue moon hike at Vulcan Mountain Wilderness Preserve in Julian on Friday, July 31st, starting at 6:45 p.m. Bring a flashlight and a sense of adventure for a two-mile hike on Five Oaks Trail to the summit for views of Julian at sunset before making your way back under a shimmering blue moon. The moon is not actually blue, by the way. That's just the nickname for the second of the two full moons in one calendar month. Park attendant Bill Augustus will be your guide and share anecdotes about the history and geography of the area. For more information, call 760-765-4098 or visit the County News Center.
You're invited to join in the fun at the Water Conservation Garden all day Saturday, August 1st from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy special events, presentations, guided tours, and more as Helix Water District celebrates its customers.
Vocalist Lillian Palmer will perform a free concert at Mission Trails Regional Park on Sunday, August 2nd at 3 p.m. along with the three-piece jazz trio. Most of the songs she will sing are from the late 50s and early 60s.
Christian Community Theater's production of Mary Poppins continues through July until August 2nd at the Mount Helix Park Amphitheater. For tickets to enjoy this show featuring everyone's favorite nanny, you can visit cctsandiego.org.
On Sunday, August 2nd, from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. in the afternoon, there will be a grand reopening of the Rancho San Diego Farmers Market on a new day, new time, and new location. The community market provides a wonderful opportunity for customers to buy fresh fruits, vegetables, spices, herbs direct from the farm. Also, cookies, oils, hot foods, crafts, lotions, and so much more. Located on the Valhalla High School campus in Rancho San Diego.
If it's Wednesday, it's Cajon Classic Car Day in downtown El Cajon. This week's theme is Custom Creations. If you love classic and custom cars, join the fun up and down El Cajon's Main Street with music, vendors, hot rods, woodies, and motorcycles. Bring the family, picnic on the grass in Promenade Park, or shop and dine in old downtown El Cajon during Cajon Classic Cruise.
Live music featuring Slower, the ultimate boogie band, on Thursday, August 6th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East in Santee. There will be picnic-style seating, kids' activities, and it's all free in Santee. There is a pet-friendly event, so don't forget to bring Fido to meet dogs.
Every Thursday from 3 until 7 p.m. at Promenade Park at 201 East Main Street in El Cajon, the Farmers Market offers a wide variety of fresh, locally grown fruits and vegetables, freshly baked breads, and more. You can get more information at elcajonfarmersmarket.org.
This year's Ramona Country Fair will be held July 31st through Sunday, August 3rd. The 44th annual Ramona Country Fair features the Ramona Junior Fair and Livestock Auction, two stages of music and entertainment, carnival rides, a midway of craft vendors, and an expanded food court. Entertainment includes a battle of the bands, music by a number of headlining bands, the annual Ramona Idol competition, a singer-songwriter showcase, and much more. The fair will focus on good old country fun with contests featuring jams, jellies, bread making, salsa, jerky, and more. For more information, visit RamonaFair.com. Now for a preview of coming attractions. The very popular Friday night dinner in an outdoor concert. Bring a picnic basket or eat at one of the great restaurants in El Cajon. Then enjoy the Mighty Untouchables in concert. The Mighty Untouchables perform everything from Motown to classic rock along with pop and country. These musicians and singers entertain throughout the world and please audiences of all tastes with their extensive and diverse collection of material. For fun and dancing, enjoy this cool and classy scene. That's Prescott Promenade Park, Friday night, August 7th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Santee Lakes on Finita Parkway in Santee will be hosting Movies by the Lake. On Friday, August 7th, you can watch PG movie Maleficent at 6 p.m. For more information, join the Facebook page Santee Lakes. Then click on Movies by the Lake Maleficent in order to join the event. For more details, go to santeelakes.com/special-events.
Saturday, August 8th marks the first annual Sip of Julian. Eight participants are included in this event, highlighting Julian area wineries and other tasting rooms. Joining the traditional wine producers are a craft brewery, hard cider, and a mead producer. Starting at 11 a.m., visitors have 6 hours to enjoy their sips paired with locally produced appetizers. For tickets or more information, contact Julian's Chamber of Commerce at julianca.com.
On Sunday, August 9th, Mission Trails Regional Park will have a San Diego Native American Flute Circle. The free concert begins at 1 p.m. and ends at 3 p.m. It will take place at the Visitors Outdoor Amphitheater. You can listen to flute players who honor Native American music in a beautiful natural setting. For more details about this event, go to mtrp.org/events.
Monterath Powell Productions presents the premiere of a new girl group, Trace, at the Visionary Performance Space on August 14th at 7 p.m. The cabaret-style production features three powerhouse vocalists, Nicole Isabel, Calliope Marin, and Sophia Rogers listen to these young divas as they sing some of today's and yesterday's popular hits by artists such as Adele, Beyonce, Tina Turner, and many more. Also enjoy food, drinks, and music along with the premiere of Trace. For tickets and details, visit visionarydancetheater.org.
Lamplighters Community Theater continues its 78th season with The Supporting Cast, a comedy to be staged August 14th through September 13th with Ellen, the wife of a successful author, writes a sizzling novel. Her friends are thrilled until she invites them to her Malibu beach house and reveals that they are the characters. For tickets, visit lamplighterslamesa.com. That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from Sheriff Bill Gore. The sheriff invites you to join the San Diego County Sheriff's Department for free Night Out Against Crime events this Tuesday, August 4th. Sheriff stations and substations all over the county will be hosting block parties to help communities take a stand against crime, including Alpine, Lemon Grove, Rancho San Diego, Ramona, and Santee's sheriff stations or substations here in East County. Activities vary by location and may include free food, drinks, giveaways, and activities for kids. Meet your neighbors as well as deputies who patrol your area. All locations will have a sheriff's crime prevention specialist on site so you can get tips on how to stay safe. For a full list of locations countywide, you can visit sdsheriff.net. To learn more about the sheriff's crime prevention unit, including important safety tips, you can visit sdsheriff.net/crimeprevention. And if you can't make it to any of these events, you could leave your porch light on as a show of solidarity on Night Out Against Crime.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history. Back in the saddle for our next conversation is Gary McClintock, founder of McClintock Saddleworks in Descanso. Gary is famous for his beautiful custom-made saddles with their gleaming leather and hand-tooled detailing. But he is equally famous for his knowledge of the world of Los Vaqueros, the cowboys of the Southwest and Mexico. Gary, welcome back.
Thanks, Helen. It's really great to be back with you. I enjoy being around you. You're such a lovely, vivacious person that it always is encouraging to me.
Oh, gee willikers. Now tell me, cowboys in general have such a hold on the American psyche. For you, what is it about the story of the vaquero that is so compelling?
You know, I think where that started for me was with Granville Martin, who I came to know. I wasn't that thrilled and overwhelmed with the cowboy as a rodeo cowboy. I was more interested in the guy that rode the backcountry and handled cattle and maybe had a little small ranch. You know, what we were presented during the 50s and all the cowboy shows that were on TV, that just sounded like a great way to live. You know, that was exciting. Not necessarily the rodeo cowboy, but the ranch cowboy. That's what got my attention. And when I met Granny, he introduced me to the whole world of the California vaquero, which was a whole different way of doing things than even the Texas cowboy.
Gary, for our listeners, Granville, or Granny Martin, is a historian?
Yeah, he was a great historian. He didn't plan to be that way, but he just got all wrapped up in everything. First, he was a rancher, a vaquero is what he called himself. They would go vaquero and not cowboy, and he would always refer to it that way because it was a little bit different way of handling cattle and being that type of a range cowboy is what he was.
It sounds like you're referring to the vaquero as a kind of steward of the land. That's a different thing altogether.
Definitely a steward of the land. You know, if you look to what an environmentalist is today, they had to be that way. They had to make the land produce for them. If the land wasn't taken care of, it wouldn't produce. Of course, you had to have rain, which is what they all pray for, to make the grass grow. But they were very essential stewards of the land that preserved the land for us to what we really, it's been abused, so it's not as nice as it was in their day. I mean, there's a different philosophy that's out there with the different agencies of the government as far as how the backcountry should be handled. But in his day, it was the cattlemen that were foremost survivors. I mean, it was a ranching community, a ranching society that existed with 90% of the people living out on the land, where today it's reversed. You know, it's probably 99% of the people live.
So we're talking about a whole ranching society in parts of California, Arizona, New Mexico, and spilling over the border.
Oh, yeah.
Into Mexico.
Yeah, Mexico's really where it all comes from. And that, you know, as they moved north back in the 1700s, they settled California and they settled New Mexico. They settled Arizona. And that was the only thing there was to do, is raise cattle. And you needed horses, so they raised horses as well. That was like making automobiles in that day. You had to have good horses, so along with the cattle came the good horses.
So there's a big Spanish colonial backstory.
Absolutely.
To the world of the vaqueros.
Oh, that's who it is.
Because, where do horses come from?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good question. But they introduced as far back as when Cortez came. Cortez was the one that introduced horses in 1519. Yeah. He brought, I don't know, maybe 19 or 20 horses with him. They were in Hispaniola before that, down by Cuba, and some were in Cuba. They were starting to raise them there. They were getting ready for a intrusion, an entrada into Mexico. It wasn't Mexico at the time. It became Nueva España to them,
yes.
But it was just a big landmass out there that they wanted to explore.
And those horses then multiplied, or they ran away?
No, they were very well under control. The end of breeding program came along with that. There was a breeding program in the islands down by Hispaniola. That's why they had the horses there. They were breeding them there.
And then
brought them over and they had the opportunity, once the conquest was done, which didn't take much, they started breeding, and some went to South America, some went to North America. So different breeding programs went throughout all of Mexico.
So it's fair to say that we have historic horses, that the vaqueros you're talking about in a contemporary sense are actually riding and herding on horses with this long pedigree.
Well, it's so mixed at this time, it's really hard to... What you say is true if you look to the Mustang. That probably has more of the Andalusian, the Lusitanos, the horses that came with the conquest. Those were the horses that propagated, and they did run loose after a while, but that was later. You know, at first, they all had to run loose because they didn't have fences. You know, they had to eat, so they let them run loose, but that's when the Indians got all the horses. They stole them from the Spanish and started their own breeding program.
See,
they really had no horses to speak of until... Really, Father Kino came into what they called Pimeria Alta, which is the northern part of Mexico and the southern part of Arizona and New Mexico.
And Father Kino is?
Kino's the one, a Jesuit priest that introduced all that. Mm-hmm. And he had very little protection, but had a lot of livestock, a lot of cattle. And he introduced it to the Indians. He wanted them to propagate them. He wanted them to get involved with ranching. And they did.
Father Kino was a Jesuit, so he predated Father Serra,
who was
Franciscan. Yeah,
yes.
There was a kind of warfare between the two orders. If I'm recalling this correctly, Royal Spain removed the Jesuits.
Absolutely, that's exactly right.
They sent in the Franciscans.
Became very jealous of the Jesuits. Carlos III, the king over there in Spain, was thinking that the Jesuits were taking advantage of him and holding back from him taxes or gold or something. And in reality, they really were not. They had very little, and they were a very selfless people. They lived for the Indians that they were trying to convert.
Gary, you mentioned fencing, and there is that old song, "Don't Fence Me In," yeah. And which is kind of the anthem,
yeah.
The national anthem for a cowboy or a vaquero. Yeah. And really, in point of fact, for a modern vaquero, how much fencing is there? Is there room to be a vaquero?
You know, Helen, that's a great observation, because it's literally gone. There's very few places where you have open range. I mean, there's some of that some places, but nothing like what it was back during that era. I mean, the whole world moved on horseback. The horses were trained so well because there was so many of them to select from to begin with, after they perpetuated, especially in California. The great horse herds just multiplied. They dissolved the missions in 1835, so about that, before that point, maybe between 1820 and 1835 was when there was such a entourage of horses grazing throughout California and the Southwest. Well, from that, they could make a good horse because they had nothing but cattle and horses, and cattle, working cattle with a young horse gives them a reason to turn, to stop, to go, to back up, to do all the different things that we require of a well-trained horse. It just came from natural working, and they were better. One horse might be better than another because of natural selection. One was just a little bit better than the other one at doing this, and as a consequence, if they could perpetuate that, they would. But they didn't necessarily ride the mares.
In the folklore of the cowboy and the vaquero, is there anything similar to the rules of the road for cars and boats, where you have to give way? So say two vaqueros are meeting on a narrow trail on a mountain grade. Who gets to go first?
That's a pretty interesting question, actually. Probably not so much of a reality. Some situations would develop that way. There is some etiquette regarding the herdsman who are handling the stock, cattle, sheep, goats, whatever it is. There is kind of a rite of passage, like if you're working the right side of the herd, you don't cross in front of the guy that's working to the left of you. He shifts to the left and you go with him.
Okay.
More like a dance, you know, instead of crossing in front of each other.
Okay.
And there is that.
Is that where do-si-do comes from?
I don't know. It could be.
Are you saying that it's the tradition of the vaquero is handed down in families?
Oh, absolutely. From generation to generation. In fact, we made a video about the cowboys in Baja, and it kind of goes into a little of that and how it was from father to son. The tradition was handed down. I mean, it was unfortunate for those who didn't have as much land. They couldn't get it handed to them like me. I wasn't in a family of that, so I kind of was left out of
that. I've seen that. I've seen that film, and it's 1 hour, and it's very good. How could our listeners order that, or can they order it?
Oh, sure, yeah. We have at my saddle shop there in Descanso, we always have copies available, and they can call us at the saddle shop. I mean, we're on the internet, BookTalkSaddles.com, we're there, and you can find our phone number, and everything's
right on the website, and
yeah.
Then you can order right there.
It's better to call and order. I'm not set up to order off our website because I want to make it more of a personal thing.
Gary, you are terrific. Thank you so much for stopping by. For the Sounds of History, I'm Helen Ofield.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Jim Hannibal,
We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.